Our talk this evening will be given by Boundless Way Zen guiding teacher Mike Wielicki Sensei.
This evening, we read, "All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature of change. There is no way to escape being separated from them." Part of our five remembrances. So I want to offer a talk this evening that may leave us with more questions than answers. I'm sitting here this evening, window open, and the crickets are outside chirping away, singing their song. I love this time of year for their sweet, beautiful, and somewhat melancholy song. The crickets coming to sing indicates that we are approaching the end of summer. We are approaching what appears to be the dying time, where the leaves begin to grow darker and then they brighten up and burst forth in color and fall off the trees, and the crickets come to silence. But tonight they're singing, and they're singing so beautifully, as if in my own heart. We sometimes describe awakening as the realization that there is no separate self, that everything is deeply interwoven, and we are part of that weaving, and that the weaving is in us. And sometimes we feel that in such beautiful, subtle ways, like when the crickets sing in our own hearts. Sometimes we feel this as a great kind of compassion that can also break our hearts as we recognize suffering in the world, whether that suffering is through profound racial injustice and inequality. Or what's been touching my heart today is I've been reading a book by David Loy, Buddhist Teachings for the Ecological Crisis. It's called Echo Dharma. And there's a chapter in there where he really talks about how we appear to be nearing the end of civilization. Not something that we often want to acknowledge or talk about. It's not 100%, but it appears that we really are leaning in that way. A few different scientific studies that he cites talk about how by the year, if we haven't ended completely the use of fossil fuels, and if we are not on complete renewable energy by the year 2030, we will have crossed the tipping point. Other studies that he cites say it's actually already too late. We already have crossed the tipping point. There's no turning back. Part of the reason for this is because at a certain point, the permafrost melts, methane escapes, and methane is an incredibly powerful climate-changing agent. More powerful than CO2. So if this is indeed true, that we've reached the point where things are beginning to melt and the methane is going to be escaping, he cites how in the past, the temperature of the globe rose from 5 to 6 degrees Celsius in a period of about 13 years. If that were to happen, that would just be the end of us. It might be the end of all life. And the notion is that this could happen easily within 100 years. I feel like one of those people who stands on a street corner with a sign saying, the apocalypse is near. Wake up, it's coming. can make a person feel a little bit like the crazy one, to be pointing out something that everybody knows is true, but nobody wants to turn toward. Nobody wants to acknowledge. It's so much easier to pretend it's not true or just kind of not care. There's this powerful koan, the Great Kalpa Fire. A monk asked, it's a little dark in here, so I'm having trouble reading it. Da Sui Fa Xian, when the Great Kalpa Fire bursts out, the whole universe will be destroyed. I wonder if it will be destroyed or not. Dai Zhui said, destroyed. The monk said, if so, will it be gone with the other? Da Shui said, gone with the other. But the case doesn't end there. A monk asked Longji Xiao Shui, when the Great Kalpa Fire bursts out, the whole universe will be destroyed. I wonder if it will also be destroyed or not. The teacher responded, not destroyed. The monk said, why is it not destroyed? Because it is the same as the whole universe. We are just little human beings held in the great vastness of space and time, in boundlessness, in singing crickets. I think sometimes we don't want to acknowledge these remarkably pressing relative truths, such as the end of civilization. Though we may still have a fighting chance of doing something about it, we might rather slip into a more comfortable place of denial. Order something on Amazon while the Amazon is being burned up. What if instead we decided to let our hearts open to what is actually happening? What if we use our practice to turn toward this relative truth? Would it destroy you? Is that the fear? That we'll be destroyed by our grief? That we'll fall into despair? What if we try it? What if we let our hearts actually open to the situation? This practice is about turning toward what is. Our great compassionate hearts include everything that is, including all the suffering of the world. That includes the whale that dies and lands on the beach with 100 pounds of plastic in its belly. We aren't separate from this world. That's the deepest teaching that we have. What if we let this world touch us? What if we let the suffering of this world touch us, of our ecosystems touch us, of the earth touch us? We know that it's crying. We can see it. Can we be open to that? Let it simply be true and practice with it. We may find that we grieve so much that we realize that our love is in that grief. Maybe we will discover our love again. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mike. We're going to move into our Dharma dialogue now, and Mike Sensei and David and I will do our best to respond to your comments and questions. But first, we'll go around and introduce everyone. So on audio only is Joanne. And for those of us on video, please wave your hand when you hear your name called. So we have Adam and Holden, and Will, Steve Abdow, Francesca, Celia, Dinah, Susan McCraw, Dawn, Susan in Freshwater Bay, Todd, Steve G, Peter, Ray, Barry, Dave, Lori and Adam in Florida, Jenny, Corwin, David and me, and of course, Mike. So please click on your Zoom hand and we'll call on you. If you're not sure how to do that, you go to the participants window. Oh, I think everybody knows how to do that here. So I won't even explain it, but Francesca has her hand up. Go ahead, Francesca.
Yeah, thank you, Mike, for that talk. It was difficult to listen to, but I've spent a lot of the day today thinking about all the suffering in the world and not even what you mentioned, and finding myself resisting and fighting it and just being really angry and sad and thinking about all the suffering, different kinds of suffering, environmental, racial, whatever. And I just thought to myself, I don't know what to do with this feeling of helplessness. It's a real feeling of like helplessness, and I don't like it. And so then I heard something from somebody on YouTube the other day. They were like saying something about like turning toward one thing, like to try to do one thing. Because if I turn towards it all, I will be crushed. I cannot turn towards it all, but yet I do want to turn away from it. And so you're right, it's like, got to face it. And I've even thought in the environment, like with the COVID, like even just running the water, do people turn the water off while they wash their hands for that time? I mean, are people conserving water? So I've been concerned about conserving water. I haven't even thought about this other climate, the pollution. So I don't know. I think there is some truth in there. It's just, I don't know what to do with this feeling of helplessness. It's just so difficult.
Thank you. You know, I think that a lot of what our practice encourages is that we sit with it, that we see it, that when we are feeling helpless, that is what is present. And I think we have this fear that it will crush us. You know, and there's this part of me that wants to say, you know, I dare you. Because there is something about bearing witness where, you know, the fear prevents us from acknowledging what's happening. And so that very fear of being crushed and of despair, you know, and there are, of course, also skillful means that we talk about in the Dharma for bearing these things, that bearing the unbearable. There's a book called Bearing the Unbearable. I mean, there are, you know, skillful means that we practice together here in Sangha, right? Being held by something larger than ourselves that we wake up to as we sit and practice together. You know, this idea of touching into it, right? And stepping back and then touching back in again, as opposed to just shutting it out, you know, completely and turning away forever. So all of these different skillful means. And of course, one of the most obvious is also like offering a response, doing something, right? Just doing something often also creates a sense of agency out of this great love, right? That we feel, and the grief we feel is out of love, right? That's our love manifesting as grief. We're just so scared to grieve that we often shut off. And so I don't know if David or Melissa have more to share.
No, that's great. Just one little tiny thing to add. I think, Francesca, you already said doing one thing is all you can do. And yeah. How many billions of people are there in the world? That's billions of one thing. It really makes a difference. So there's something about faith there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You already understand, Francesca. I think it's pretty important that you ask that question. Thank you. So we'll move on to Peter.
Thank you, Mike. That felt like a beautiful koan, really. It just is. There's so a big one. Yeah. End of life on the planet. And to really absorb that, it's really heartbreaking. And the heartbreaking, the feeling just went fairly quickly from the heartbreaking to dissolving. To just dissolving, like all boundaries just dissolving in it, because it's so big. It just dissolved in the heartbreak. And then the crickets, you know, they're not here yet. It's earlier, so they haven't come, but I love them. And actually have a little cricket that lives in here with me. But just this moment of the crickets, it all sort of just came together into this moment. Because even though the end of civilization is probably maybe, I don't know, 100 years, maybe 20 years, who knows, you know, it could be quite soon. Now, the crickets are still alive. And so are we. And a preciousness comes from that. But it's these big questions, it's easy to turn away from. It's not, I don't like turning away from it, though. I kind of really enjoy just plunging into something like that, you know, because of the dissolving and because of the presence, because of being present. There's something that seems like what the Kahuna brought up in me, but a very powerful way of presenting it, I have to say, really just resonated big.
Well, and I think that this desire to jump in, the heart longs not to hold back, you know, even to this great fear or the great sadness. There is something of the human heart that it is a relief in some ways to feel what we feel. Mm. Not easy, and but already true.
Yeah.
Appreciate naming that.
Yeah, maybe holding it away is actually more painful.
Exactly. That's my experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank Peter. You so much, Peter. Let's move on to Dinah.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. I'm moving. I don't have crickets here. But it brought to mind my little sangha here, Bright Cloud Sangha, is studying a book that is not new, but it is also about climate, Active Hope by Joanna Macy, who's been familiar with it. And it's everyone is loving it because it gives us a way to look at the damage without, you know, I mean, the subtitle is perfect, how to face the mess we're in without going crazy. And it's full of really useful, really doable little things, and group, you know, gathering a group together. It's been very inspiring. And indeed, you know, this was published 8 years ago, so you know, this problem is clearly not new. And here we are in the middle of it.
That's a great recommendation. Thank you. Yeah, I definitely recommend that book. And I also, you know, and I think that, you know, what I'm hearing is that there's so much energy and what can feel like despair and something that just swallows us up. You know, but we are also human beings, and we have one another. And there's something very powerful in our solidarity when we come together to hold all of this pain together. And when we take action together, and when we recognize the truth together, it's a very powerful thing.
Endlessly creative.
Yes.
Thank you.
Dinah.
Thanks, Dinah.
So Lori and Adam.
Thanks, Mike. I think I might be having an unusual response to this because I consider the gist of it is gratitude. Because I consider if this is all really true in 100 years and 200 years, if this is all gone, what if my parents had not been born when they were actually born? And here I am towards the end of something that's miraculous and beautiful, and what a gift. So maybe this is a selfish or an unusual response, but I just feel so grateful to be alive.
I wish I could find the quote. There's this beautiful quote in this book that speaks to that, and it's right near where I read. But the basic idea of it is, you know, that out of this sort of recognition of this likely ending, shall we say, out of this deep recognition of it, our sense of appreciation and love, right? That's what I hear. You know, this gratitude, this love, this appreciation for what is here now can intensify. And, you know, and I also think that can become a kind of a call to join in some sort of way, acting on that love.
And, you know, as you were talking, Lori, and then you quoted this from your book, Mike, from David Loy's book, this is also what Joanna Macy teaches. She talks about when you move into despair, it turns into empowerment. But as Peter was saying, if you back away, it's exhausting. This morning, well, no, this afternoon, earlier today, I gave a talk on a poem that someone in the Sangha had sent to me by Ada Limon, which is called The Conditional. And it's a very long poem, but I want to end our Dharma dialogue with the last few lines of the poem, because I think it's really speaking to what bubbled up for you, Lori, and what is part of this. I've also been reading the book Being Mortal again from a few years back. We are of the nature to die, and the planet is of the nature to die. So what do we do, and how can we allow all the feelings to be present? So Ada Limon, after listing a whole bunch of things that could happen that are awful, she says, say we spend our last moments staring at each other, hands knotted together, clutching the dog, watching the sky burn. Say it doesn't matter. Say that would be enough. Say you'd still want this. Us alive, right here, feeling lucky. So thank you all. We're not going to be able to get to everyone who raised their hand, but we'll sit for just a few more breaths.